Welcome to the Should Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Dave Ross of VSiN by the Books will join us. We'll go over some baseball. We'll do a lot of baseball. We'll put the finishing touches on football, look ahead to next year's odds, but do that very briefly just because at this point, spent 2 weeks talking about the game, thinking about the game, watched the game on Sunday. The game wasn't very good. Not much left to say on that, but we'll look ahead to next year's odds and get into some baseball and then see golf, UFC, see what else is on his mind. I have some thoughts on the NBA and the tanking and what a just disaster this season is headed for in terms of the tanking. We're not even at the All-Star break, so I'll get to that in a minute. But just final thoughts on the Super Bowl and a look here at next year's odds. Rewatch some of the game. The game was on NFL Network on Monday night. Rewatch some of it. The only thing that I would add to it, a couple things. It crossed my mind at the time. I'm not sure if I mentioned it on the show right after the Super Bowl Sunday with Gil. The one thing, looking back on it, that I think probably got lost a little bit, and I don't think it would have made a difference, but New England was down 12-0, like 7 minutes left in the third quarter, and it was 4th-and-1 from their own 41, and they punted. I remember thinking at the time, man, are you sure you want to punt there? I don't even think the announcers, Collinsworth or Tirico, I don't think either of them mentioned it. And that was one where, you know what, if that's at midfield, you don't even think twice, you're going for it. I know May was struggling and possibly banged up, which I'll get to in a second. But if you're at midfield, you go for it. If you're at the 48, you go for it. If you're at the 46, you go for it. So the fact that you're at the 41, I know if you don't get it, you're in trouble, but you're in big trouble if you punt. You got to start to take some risks. And if you were 4 or 5 yards, you know, closer, if you were 4 or 5 yards ahead on the field, and like I said, 45, 47, you don't even think twice. The fact that you're on your own 41, it makes you punt. Man, is that really that 5 or 6 yard difference? Is that really enough to make you punt? I thought that was probably a mistake, but again, at 12-0, who knows if they even get it. And if they get it, they were still up against it. Seattle was clearly the better team, but I thought that one got lost a little bit. You know, in the aftermath, I didn't think that was a great decision. Vrabel obviously made a mistake kicking the extra point at 19-6 instead of trying to make it 19-8. Vrabel's just not great in these spots. I know rah-rah, he's great with the media. He's a good coach. He's obviously a good coach. Coach of the year now with two different teams. So he's obviously a good coach, a good motivator. He is not great in some of these spots, though, in terms of you know, when to go for it, when not to go. A little Tomlin-esque where some of the little details there get lost with Vrabel. The other thing, too, I said after the game, I get the sense and, you know, heard whispers May was not 100%. People made not enough about that shoulder. It was more serious than people might think. And then after the game, you find out he's got the injection. He probably wasn't 100%. Will Campbell telling you he's not 100%. And a couple things. You can't say, hey, I'm not using this as an excuse, and then give the excuse that you were hurt, which Campbell did. May did not. May said a similar thing. May said, I was good to go, but I did get the thing. Here's the thing. They both said, especially May, in the days leading up to the Super Bowl, oh, I'm fine, good to go. You know, the plane ride really turned things around for me. As soon as we landed here, I felt good. The time off, I feel great, we're ready to go. And then afterwards say, well, I couldn't feel my shoulder, it was numb. I mean, were you lying then or are you lying now? Both can't be true. You can't be good to go, fine, nothing's bothering you, shoulder feels great, and then after it was, well, I needed a shot and I was numb. I mean, which one is it? So that is a little tough. And I do, it's not that I don't believe it. I do believe it. I do think that the shoulder was an issue. But the other problem with that is, I mean, when did the shoulder start to bother you? Because he stunk all the way from the Charger game. Texans, he was not good. Texans, that was probably his best game of the four. But even that, I mean, Stroud handed them the game. And yeah, he didn't do much in that game. Fumbled a ton of times. And did nothing against Denver. So he was not good in any of the four games. And he was downright bad. Really, in three of the four, I would say the Texans game, he was okay. The other three, he was just outright bad. And bad might be putting it kindly. So that's just tough when you say before the game, you assure everybody you're healthy. He's off the injury report. I don't think Campbell's on the injury report. So there's no way to prove these teams. It's very hard, I should say, to prove these teams are lying on the injury report. But when you say you're fine, you're good to go, then after the excuses come out, it's tough to sell both points. As far as next year's odds, talked about this a few weeks ago, and I talked about this, and Gil had the same takeaway on Monday when we did the wrap-up show. It's amazing how many teams are 20-1 or less. They don't want to get burned with long shots. For anyone that had Seattle 50-60-1 higher after week one, they don't like paying out those big numbers, and they think, hey, it's the NFL. Crazy stuff happens. It's small sample size. The games are small sample sizes with only a handful of possessions, you know, 8 or 9 possessions. and only a 17-game season. So we're not going to hang 70, 80, 100 plus to one. So you got a lot of teams in that 20 to one or shorter range. I'm looking at DraftKings. Seahawks and Rams are the co-favorites at plus 950. Bills 11 to one. Seahawks, Patriots, Ravens 11 to one. 13 to one for those teams. So Eagles, Patriots, and Ravens are all 13 to one. Then you have the Packers, Lions in that 14 to one range. Chargers and Chiefs 15 to one. I would like a little more. I don't know if it's worth betting right now. If I had to bet anything, obviously you're tempted by the Chiefs. Anytime you get Mahomes at 15 to one. That's tempting. Who knows when he'll be back, if he'll be 100% healthy, the rest of the team. There's enough questions. I feel like that's the easy answer. The Chargers at 15 to 1. I know Herbert is a choker. He never comes up big. He's been bad in the playoffs, and that's just how it's been. He's been awful in his three playoff performances. He's been bad in all three of them, 0-3, and each one is worse than the next. I get that. But their issue this year was their offensive line, and that's really a strength of their team. It's just All and Slater, two of the best offensive linemen in the league, both got hurt, and what went from a strength turns into a massive, major weakness. And now it's going to turn back into a strength. And if you look at the rest of the team, good defense. If you're going to have a good offensive line, you know, Harbaugh's teams can always run the ball. Herbert is talented, even though, you know, if you want to make the case, he's a little overrated now. I can't argue, but the talent is there. He's big. He can throw. He can run. He's accurate. You just probably need some more skill guys. I mean, speaking of excuses, you probably do need some more. A little more juice, bringing Keenan Allen back at this stage of his career. You know, McConkey's a good player, but he's not a great player. Can you get that difference maker at wide receiver? Can you just inject a little more life, a little more juice into that offense with the skill guys and go from there? I think at 15 to 1, I would like a little more. I would like a little bit more. But I think of all of the ones, that's the best bet. I know people are going to be tempted by the Giants because they follow the Patriots blueprint here. There's a lot of similarities where May was a second-year quarterback with a lot of promise. Dart's a second-year quarterback with a lot of promise. Vrabel was a new head coach who had past success somewhere else. Harbaugh is a new head coach who had past success somewhere else. So you got second-year quarterback, a coach you got some respect for. You got neighbors. You got Scadabo. Obviously, the offensive line has been an issue for them forever, but they've hit on some recent drafts. At least last year, it looks like it's going to be a good draft. They get another high pick. I don't think they're going to win it all, but it's 70 to 1. And just because it happened last year with the Patriots and Seahawks making runs doesn't mean it's going to happen every year. I mean, that is an outlier. That is the exception, not the rule. But Giants at 70 to 1. Interesting. Falcons at 80 to 1 for all their talent. What a disaster that situation is with James Pierce, who finished third in Rookie of the Year. And I can't imagine he plays for them next year. You never know with the NFL and the legal system and all this stuff, how it's going to work. But you can't imagine after what Pierce did on Saturday night. And Google it if you haven't heard about it. I don't want to go into all the details of that, but crashing his car into his ex-girlfriend's car and into police cars. I mean, what a disaster that is. But Falcons have a lot of talent for a team that is 80 to 1. No Cousins. Who knows where he goes? Maybe he goes back to Minnesota. Falcons at 81. I get it from the talent perspective. The division's winnable, but not a big believer in Penning. So, again, I'd like a little more, but Chargers at 15 to 1 is interesting. Just not cutting in line to bet it. I mean, you're tying up your money for a year. I mean, literally a full calendar year. And I mean, 15-1 is a great price, but it is still the Chargers. It is still Herbert. But I do think they will be a team if they get their offensive lineman back healthy and they can have a good offseason. They could be really, really good next year. But it's a tough division, and it's the Chargers. The Chiefs are going to be good. The Broncos were just the one seed. And the Chargers, and not just with Herbert, but going back years with Rivers and Marty Schottenheimer, and they just always find a way to come up short as I talk against my own handicap here. But Chargers at 15-1 did jump out to me as one. If I had to bet, I'd probably just take that one. Before we get to Dave, the NBA. NBA is going to be on center stage this weekend. Oh, my goodness. I don't know if people saw this. I'm sure some of you did. They have eight teams now tanking, blatantly tanking, guys pulling their starters out in the fourth quarter, not playing in the fourth quarter with leads just to try to lose, just to try to get as many ping pong balls as possible. Utah, New Orleans, Memphis, the Wizards, it is just an absolute disaster. And I think this might come to a point. I know it's been bad for a while. It's one thing if it's the last week of the season, last couple weeks of the season. We're barely into February, a week or so into February here, and you got teams, we're not even at the All-Star break, and these teams are not only not trying to win, it's one thing if you're not trying to win, they're blatantly trying to lose. I know that, look, it's been going on a while. And there's no perfect solution. There's talks about getting rid of the draft, making everyone a free agent. That's complicated. That's extreme. Just getting rid of the lottery odds altogether. Just, hey, 1 through 30, everyone has equal odds. That'll get rid of the tanking. Maybe that's the solution. I think there's something needs to be done because it's not a sport. In football, if somebody who's trying to lose the game, even at the end of the year in the NFL where the draft pick, there is no lottery. You just get the number one pick. We see teams all the time win and spoil their draft pick. And part of it is football. You physically can't tank. You'll get hurt. You'll get somebody else hurt and seriously hurt. You know, baseball, these teams don't tank. Football, the teams try. Baseball, the teams try. Basketball, the NBA is the only team where the sports, not only they're not trying, they're trying the opposite. They're trying to lose. I don't know what the solution is. I really don't. But I would think something has to be done, and their All-Star weekend is just a complete waste of time. The dunk contest, give it a rest. Give it 3 years off, 5 years off. Let people miss it for a while. If people miss it, bring it back. People are sentimental. They'll probably miss it after 3 years, 5 years. You just run out of dunks to do. There's only so many different possibilities, so many different forms of a dunk a human being can do. And we're at that point. You never heard of these guys that are doing it. It's all, you know, backups and scrubs and guys you never heard of. It's not Jordan doing it anymore or Kobe or Dominique Wilkins. It is Vince Carter. It is so past the point where it has any interest. Three-point contest, okay, it's a three-point contest. It's hard to make that non-competitive. That's the one thing that I guess is semi-watchable. But the game is ridiculous. Now they have this format where it's the USA versus the world. I mean, what happened to just East versus West? And I don't mind US versus the world, but they have this little, they have a bracket, and it's a very confusing scenario there with the like little 12-minute games versus this team, and then that team's going to play this team. I mean, just keep it simple, please. It's an all-star game. It doesn't have to be that complicated. Just have it be the East versus the West and have the guys try, or U.S. versus the world works. I think that works. You bring out some national pride, but just have it be one game. We don't need to split it into different teams and have brackets and tournaments and, you know, play a quarter here, a quarter there. I mean, it's just very confusing to explain. And NBA's got some issues. They still got a really good postseason. It's a good playoffs, and I think their playoffs will be good. You got a lot of competitive teams. OKC still the rightful favorite, even though they struggled and SGA's hurt. Denver is a worthy competitor. San Antonio on the rise, and they've given OKC all they can handle, and then they dominated OKC. Rockets are really good with Durant. Lakers have Luka, even though they're not on that level. Minnesota's a sleeper. East is competitive, even though it's not as good as the West. The problem is it's just the regular season and the tanking, and then their All-Star weekend. There's just a lot. I think Silver's just too soft on these players. David Stern used to just rule this league with an iron fist, and everyone fell in line, and everyone, even though the regular season never really meant anything, they treated it like it meant something, and we're way past the point where that's the case here. And this is just, boy, this is as bad as it's ever been here with Utah and all these different teams tanking, and we're barely, you know, a week and a half into February. But we will, NBA will have center stage this weekend with the All-Star weekend. I'm sure all that will get attention. Silver will have a lot of questions to answer about this stuff. I'm not sure what the solution is, but something has to be done. Something has to be looked into. They have tried with reducing the number of lottery balls the team at the top have. You reduce that advantage, all that stuff, where if you have the one, if you got the worst record, it's not that much of an advantage, and they flattened the odds, but they haven't flattened it enough because these teams are still mailing it in, and we've still got a lot of the season left to go. So NBA, some questions to answer here, talk some football, but coming up next, we'll talk some baseball, we'll wrap football, we'll get Dave Ross's thoughts on that, golf, UFC, that is next. This Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can catch him, VSiN by the books, the First Strike podcast. He is generous enough to join us once again. Dave Ross. Dave, how are you, man? Thanks for coming on.
I'm good. I wouldn't say I'm great because, you know what? It's like the old Bill Parcells line. It's why you lift all that damn weight. You like to build to crescendo, then you want to nail the Super Bowl. Well, terrible Super Bowl for yours truly. And I've been so good since my VSiN inception 5 years ago. And this might have been the worst gambling Super Bowl that I've had in quite some time.
I didn't realize it was that bad. What got you?
I didn't have enough on the Seattle side. I got home on some Travion Henderson props, which really kind of saved the day. So it wasn't a complete disaster as I'm making it out to be. But I just felt like side and total, I did like the over. Almost got there. Kenneth Walker, of course, gets called back on that run that would have put the game over and really would have turned it into a profitable day for me. But I felt 2 minutes into the game, how did I see this the other way for the Patriots? Like, you know what I mean? Like, all we do is watch football, every nook and cranny of it, for 18 weeks in the postseason. How could I have been that off on my assessment that I thought 4.5 was a lot? I did think Seattle might win, you know, a field goal type game. That's the way I kind of had looked at it, but I thought there was value in those points. And I was so disappointed. Early on, I felt like Vrabel, and maybe it was the shoulder, right? Maybe it really was the injury, that he just put on the guardrails and said, I'm going to punt as often as possible. And I thought, what are we doing? Are we trying to win the Super Bowl? Or are we just trying to keep it close and hope for a miracle and get a turnover or two and somehow luck our way into it? I was really disappointed in the game plan by Vrabel and certainly Josh McDaniels, that I felt like they just dummied it down so much that I felt like there was no chance of that ticket getting home.
Yeah, and we'll move on from this quickly because I'm sure after 2 weeks to talk about the Super Bowl, you know, in a boring game, really, too. I was talking about this when I was doing the Monday show. Usually you have these Super Bowls and you have a coaching decision, a fourth down decision. It's amazing. This era of football, we didn't get one fourth down attempt. But I actually thought there was one time Vrabel down 12-0.
Oh, go
like for mid-third quarter, like fourth and one. Hey, man, this is not a seven-quarter game. Eventually, you do have to score two touchdowns. But there wasn't that much in terms of coaching decisions. Yeah, he could have, you know, gone for two. There wasn't, like, a turning point of the game. No. There wasn't a controversial referee. There wasn't, you know, it's hard to do sports talk radio on this game for 2 or 3 hours or more because – there just wasn't a lot there. It was just a grinded out kind of win for Seattle. Field goal. It was almost like a baseball team that just kept getting sack flies and sack flies and sack flies. The other team couldn't get a guy on first base.
Yeah, felt like a 5-1 win, right? It's just a mundane game in May that I hope the Mets can get a lot of this year. But, yeah, that's what it was. It was boring. It was pitching and defense, if you will, turned some double plays and put out any potential rallies out there. So, yeah, not, you know, it was the antithesis of what we saw in the World Series with Toronto and the Dodgers. And maybe the way that season culminated, we were hoping for some of that. In the NFL, we just didn't get it.
NFL next year, Seahawks the short shot plus 950. So this is DraftKings, FanDuel plus 750. But the Rams and Seahawks both plus 950 are a reflection of what this year was, where they were the two best teams. Bills 11-1, Eagles, Patriots, and Ravens all 13-1. Packers, Lions are 14-1. Chiefs and Chargers are 15-1. Broncos and 49ers are 18-1. Then the Texans, Jags 20-1. Bengals 25-1. Bears 25-1. I'm not going to let you say the Cowboys just to make you work here. If I gave you a $100 free bet here, you would use it on who?
It's such a great question. I was nodding my head disapprovingly in a lot of those numbers that you posted out there. Wow. I fell for the trap last year, and I might fall for it again. If you made me take free money and place it on a long shot, give me the Bengals at 25-1. And the whole reason is Emo Joe. Where is he? If he wants to play football again, if he wants to play for Zach Taylor, who's going to be probably the shortest shot on the board next year for first coach fired. And I get that. Like, I like that angle of I think the coach has to know that he's on the hot seat. Now, the Bengals are pretty cheap historically. They don't like to pay multiple coaches. So if he stays week one, he's probably going to stay through all 18. And then a change will be made if it doesn't go well at the end of the year. Al Golden, year two of that defense, can they play a little bit better? Can you draft offensive line? Can you trade offensive line? Can you free agency bulk up the offensive line? How many years have we said that now since they got back to the Super Bowl against the Rams? They were oh so close to winning it. I think there is value in that number. I don't know what the rest of the AFC North is going to look like. I know this. It feels like a disaster already in Cleveland. So I saw numbers at 11-1 for them to win the division. No way. To me already, I like Mike McCarthy. I like him a lot. You know that. But, you know, they're already north of 4-1 to repeat as divisional champs this year. Are they bringing back Aaron Rodgers for another year? Are they really good enough to win that division 2 years in a row? I don't think so. So by process of elimination, I'm already getting to the Ravens in a first-year head coach in Jesse Minter. Is he ready to win that division with Lamar Jackson? Is that offense-defense type thing, defensive-minded head coach? So to me, it gets me back to the Bengals. And if they can win that division, all of a sudden, Will, I look at it and I go, well, then they're hosting, at worst, a wild-card game. At best, they could be in the running for a number one or a number two seed out there and get multiple home games potentially and or even a bye. So at 25-1, if you if you kind of thread the needle in that division, which I think they can, that number at a longer shot makes the most sense than the shorter shots that you mentioned.
Baseball, remind us again what baseball bets you have made or are thinking of making.
I've never, and I say again, never had this many tickets already in pocket, and we haven't even gotten to spring training yet, right? So I keep adding on. I love when you come on with me and Jensen, shameless plug, 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern here on VSiN by the Books. I love our baseball talks because they did get me to the window on a bunch of different plays. Look, the homer play that you knew I was going to make was the Mets over. But I bet it at 86.5 a long time ago now, almost 3 weeks ago, well before they made their big move.
You gave it out on here, too. So, yeah.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And I said the whole rationale with you, Will, was they're going to do something. Uncle Steve is going to do something. He's not going to eat that money. He's already said it. His fun in life is to try to bring the Mets championship. And so I look now in the futures market. The Mets are up to 90.5. So I got 4 wins already in pocket. I can't do a whole lot better than that as a 2-unit play. Betting on something that I thought would happen, didn't know what it would look like, you know, if it was going to be Peralta or not, but that's already come to fruition there. Now, some of the other more, I'd say, speculative plays that I've made, I did bet on some lower teams. I did bet on the A's and their win total over 76.5. I don't know if they can pitch yet, but that lineup's going to rake. I do know that. They're going to be able to hit. And then one that I added yesterday, which is similar to the A's in the AL West, the Pittsburgh Pirates. I'm buying low on the Buccos, Will. And look, you know me, I'm like Mr. Red. I've been talking about you with the Reds for 3 years now. And I don't have any tickets on the Reds right now. I love their pitching. I don't know that they have enough offensively to really win that division. I think the Brewers finally have to take a realistic step back. I know the Cubs look better on paper right now. But to me, if the Brewers take that significant step back, it could be Pittsburgh that takes that big step up. That lineup finally should be able to hit. And we all know what Skeens is. We'll find out what Jones is, when he can come back, if he's really going to be that 1-2 punch in the pitching department there. But at 76.5, I had to take a shot in the over for Pittsburgh. I did buy in there. And something tells me there that ownership is actually smartly spending money offensively. And I don't think that means they trade pieces before the trade deadline. If they don't get off to a good start, the Marcell Ozuna pickup is the last indication of that. I think they're going to hit enough to be a real player. I think it's an 80-win team. Can they win the division? I don't know. But I do like their over-win total.
How do you stack up? How do you handicap the NL East here? Because, you know, you could talk me into the Braves bounce back and they win 93 games. Wouldn't be shocked. There's a lot of talent. You can also tell me, you know what, those guys declined. They declined for a reason. And we're just trying to talk ourselves into the Braves. And they haven't been that team in a couple of years. Same thing with Philly, where you could tell me, you know what, they missed their window. Wheeler, who knows when he's coming back, what he'll look like when he's coming back. That's a serious injury for a pitcher. Yeah. They lose Suarez, Harper, Schwarber. These guys are all, you know, a year older. Schwarber's still going to hit, but you get the idea. You can also tell me, hey, they're still really good, and they still win their 90-something games, and then there's the Mets. How do you stack up those three teams? What is your view in that order with Mets, Braves, and Phillies?
No bets in pocket yet to win the division, right? But I covered him his first days in the bigs in D.C. Bryce Harper's an interesting cat, and I don't know where he is mentally. Right? Like, I think he's sleeping in the hyperbolic chamber these days. And all of a sudden, a guy that used to run through walls and crash through everything is now in this self-preservation mode. I don't know if that's good or bad for Philly. Like, is he still the same MVP Bryce Harper? Because as great as Schwarber is, and re-signing him is big, I just wonder if the sand in the hourglass is starting to go in the other direction for that team. I thought last year was kind of their... If we're going to get the band back together, it's for last year. Sounds like they're trying to do that this year. You know how much I love Zach Wheeler, and I'm just hoping for good health. But that's a serious injury that you're coming back when you're talking about blood clots and stuff of that nature, like really, you know, serious life issues, not just pitching issues. So when you lose a guy like Suarez, and then I start to say, well, is Philadelphia going to act like a smaller market team at the deadline? Because they made their move to keep Schwarber, right? Or if it goes south, do they say, you know what, the Mets – and the Braves really are the class of the division, and we're going to have to think about a different business operation here come trade deadline. So I don't know that I'm ready to write them off, because I do think if you make these moves to the older players, maybe that does signal that you buy more players at the deadline. But that always is a key to my rationale. I know Steve Cohen is going to do that in New York. So again, Homer aside, and I haven't bet it yet, if you made me somebody, made me bet somebody to win the division, I'd take the Mets right now at a fair price point. Banking on the uncertainty of Atlanta, they're going to be much better just with health. We get that. But we're then betting on everything completely flipping from a year ago to go to the positive that went to the negative. I'm not ready to do that. And again, after I got all over the what are the Mets doing hyperbole, which I was fell victim to initially, I actually think the lineup and the defense could be better. I really do. So if the defense is better, and it was not good at the end of the year, and the pitching was not good at the end of the year, and now you go get a frontline ace, it's going to make all those twos and threes a little bit better. If the bullpen without Sugar Diaz can be as good potentially with Williams and Weaver, you would know that better than most as a Yankee backer. I'm hoping that that duo is as good as Sugar was on the back end of the bullpen. Middle relief was a disaster a year ago for the Mets. It can't be worse. So to me, there might be some addition by subtraction in the long run. I actually think the Mets should be better off this year.
What was Harper like to cover?
He was so young, and I was even a younger man back then. Interesting in a positive way, but a guy that always spoke his mind. But remember, when he came up, bullseye was on that guy from day one, and he did that to himself. If you remember, in the minors, he was blowing kisses to the pitchers. First time he stepped in between the lines, Cole Hamels put one right between his back. Remember that? I mean, that was
that's
first
what I was trying to
club.
Think. Didn't he steal home on him too? When Hamels threw the first, and he stole home, and then I don't think that caused it, but I forget what caused it originally. But I remember those two, and when Hamels was on the Philly, I want to say 2009 or 10, something like that, those two guys.
Absolutely. And I think it's a very different guy from the guy that I covered back then. He's older, he's mature. But when I see this now, this evolution of the human and the athlete, it does kind of raise a flag to me that he's in self-preservation mode. Back then, he was reckless, man, which everybody's going to be when you're on the cover of Sports Illustrated back when it meant something, and you're going to be the savior of Washington, D.C. baseball back then. And then they move on from you, and you move on from them. They win a World Series without you, and you still haven't won one in Philadelphia. I mean, that stuff stings. It's got to sting as a professional athlete. So I think he's looking at it, and the Phillies are looking at it like, really, the sand in the hourglass there in Philadelphia is going in the other direction. Really is. So I don't know if all this stuff is going to be able to preserve him for a really great 162 and MVP Harper. If that guy exists, they probably do win the division. But I'm betting against it this year. I don't think that's going to be the same guy that we saw for all those years early in D.C. and then later in MVP years in Philadelphia.
Miami was feisty last year, and you know that they ruined the Mets season at the end, and they always seem to give the Mets a hard time going back years. I mean, years now, when Miami doesn't have a good team, they still always give the Mets a hard time. You think Miami can be feisty, flirt with a wild card spot, or is that asking too much?
No, I think they will be feisty, and they're probably are the forgotten team. Well, the Nats clearly are the forgotten team because I don't think anybody's going to look at any visions of grandeur there in D.C. this year, which is a shame. But yes, if you had to pick a team that's flying below the proverbial radar, it would be Miami. But like, well, how are they going to win? Are they going to win with pitching and defense with young arms? Is that the way we're going to beat you? Do they have enough offense to really compete? I know the Mets, the concern is that they got rid of a lot of offense. I think that's a little bit overblown. So my contention with betting on a younger, feistier team like Miami is, can they genuinely score enough? That is what I don't know that I'm ready to bet on. So I like their makeup. I like the direction. This is kind of what they do historically. Normally ends up in a World Series somewhere down the road. I don't know if we're ready for that yet in Miami this year, but certainly a team to keep an eye on. And they showed at the end of the year that if that's the team you get now at the beginning of the year, then they could be a dangerous out.
How do you handicap the AL East? Pretty competitive division. I like Baltimore. I think Baltimore could be much better after a down year last year. Yankees are still the Yankees, but you know, one injury to Judge, and that team looks a lot different. I do feel like even though it's been a disappointing offseason, and they never – it's not George Steinbrenner. I mean, that's as simple as that. They just – they're very budget conscious. They still had one of the best offense, if not the best offense in baseball last year. I think people forget that just because they got smoked in the playoffs the way they did. You know, Toronto went to a World Series, was a play away from winning it, as you know. And Boston's still really good. So I don't know. Of the four there, it's really tough. Is there a bet there? How do you break it down?
Well, you were the guy that kind of turned me on to it of the Orioles as being kind of the sleeper cell in that division. And I haven't got to the window yet, but because of that conversation we had, I started to really go into some of their numbers. And 84.5, I've still, you can still find that out there in the marketplace. I think that's more than a fair number to play an over on Baltimore. Because let's say hypothetically, right, 5-1 to win the division for Baltimore. What's that win total got to look like? 90 wins. If you go out and make the Pete Alonso move in the offseason, you go make a trade with Anaheim to get some offense there in Ward. You're starting to beef up the middle of that lineup a little bit there in Charm City. Can you go get an arm? Because they're going to need more pitching, right? I don't think that they have enough pitching right now to win the division. But if the bats can kind of carry them in a bandbox that is Camden Yards, I know they move the fences back, but still, that's predominantly the way they're going to win there. If they can do that and then get enough pitching, I think it still would be good enough to get over a win total of 84.5. I don't think that when you make those investments and you make those deals that you would then skip out on those if you get off to a slow start before the trade deadline. I think that's a number I'm going to get in pocket over 84.5.
Jensen seems to think, and this isn't related to Baltimore, Jensen seems to think Scuba will not be there the whole year. Is that right?
He does. He's got that belief that because now that you go make the deal to get Framber and you pay him, which is just what message does that send?
That's tough.
That we'll pay for Framber Valdez, but we won't pay for, I don't know that it's arguable, the best pitcher in baseball. I mean, come on. It's Tarek Skubal. But you won't make that investment. You lowball him in arbitration. I've never understood that concept. Let me go, Will, bring you in front of a court of law, tell you how bad of an employee you are, but I'd still kind of like to keep you on the cheap. What a weird disconnect that is. So is that a burnt bridge that 2 months in that Skubal's already let you know in so many words, this is what you do to me? Well, I'm gone. Well, then you have to do your due diligence. You can go back to Shohei Ohtani in Anaheim. And Artie Moreno, at the owner, said, I'm not going to be the guy that trades away Shohei Ohtani. Well, great. Then you let him walk. So, right? That was your statement. So
some hill to die on. Yeah.
Yeah. So what are you going to do in Detroit? Are you going to go, you know, I don't want to be the guy that trades Tarek Skubal. Then you're going to get nothing for him but compensatory picks? Like, you would have to deal him. Realistically, you would have to trade Skubal before the deadline. And it really doesn't even matter where you are. Like, would you then, because you're looking then at Skubal as a rental on your own team to try to buy in for 1 year. That's what you're telling him, because he's not going to resign with you now. I don't think so. And so if that's the case, I think you'd be doing a disservice to the future of Detroit baseball to not move him before the deadline. And that's why I'm in the Royals. That's my team in that division this year that I played over win totals on. I played them over 81.5. That's now up to 82.5. Woo! I got a whole win closing line value in pocket from about a month ago. But look, they've got enough pitching, I think, and young pitching there certainly to go with some of the veterans they have in the rotation. I think Michael Garcia is going to be a superstar in the making for the Royals. We'll find out about Vinny, if he's going to be able to hit. And certainly you got Jack Hags, the young star, a budding superstar you would hope the Royals are hoping for. They got enough young and old to go with Salvi Perez. I really like the middle of the lineup, Bobby Witt Jr. We all know how good he can be. So I got about 5-6 guys in that Kansas City lineup I can depend on. I think they have enough pitching. So while everybody's looking at Detroit, I think Cleveland's got to take a step back this year with nothing being done in the offseason. Kansas City is my bet on team in that division.
Yeah, and you laugh about one win of CLV. One win can be the difference sometimes. Yankees 93.5. I had it. The Bear had it. And I think they won their last like 9 games to get 94.
It.
And it's just a absolutely just ridiculous beat. They beat up on all these teams in September, Baltimore and the White Sox, and they went over. You're an optimistic guy. You're a positive guy. You've been around this stuff for a while. Is there any way we avoid a strike, a work stoppage here in baseball in the next couple of years?
You know, as somebody of age, not only did I live through one, but I ended up covering one in my early days in Washington, D.C. Back then. Look, that baseball strike of 94, I thought they've put themselves on the brink of becoming a second-tier sport. And for maybe a lot of years, they did. And it's part of the reason why the NFL is not only king, but any crown they want, they take. They'll take it from college football. You want to go up against it. We'll beat anybody else out there in the market space that wants to go against us. And it's taken decades for baseball to get to where they got last year with one of the best World Series, maybe the best World Series that you'll ever see. You would say, well, they can't be dumb enough to do this to their fan base. They can, and they probably will. Look, here's the weird thing for me, Will, and I talk about with Jensen all the time as a former major leaguer, as a guy that knows these intricacies and player reps and all those sort of things. I'm with the players in the context of course, the owners are always, to me, the enemy. But if I'm being perfectly blunt and being perfectly honest, the unfair marketplace that is the NFL is what makes the NFL so great, because every year we get worse to first. We had three teams go from worst in their division to division winners a year ago. That was Carolina, Chicago, and the Patriots went from 4-13 to the Super Bowl. That doesn't exist in Major League Baseball because we have what is the honest way of get whatever you can get, no salary cap. Okay, you've got a luxury tax. You want to pay that? Great. But that is the difference. So I know it's unfair. I'm arguing against the fair marketplace, which is the way the current system in Major League Baseball is. So I'm not rooting for the owners. But if we're being honest, that is part of what makes the NFL great, that there's a cap that you can't go over, and that puts everybody in the same playing field. Let's have a ceiling floor. That would make it more helpful for the players. And let's have a cap of some degree that everybody's got to stay within those margins. And I think you'll get more variance than the Dodgers being able to do what they do every year.
Last couple, golf, UFC. I'll give you the floor. Golf first. Anything you got that you would recommend to the audience?
Below the Hard X does not count. Screw that. We got his ass. Top Gun. I'm looking back at Maverick McNeely. I keep betting this kid. He's scored some tickets 2 weeks ago, top 10. Last week had a top 10 on Mav. Crashed and burned, eh, Mav? He went from in the final group to T11, $0. I got on Maverick McNeely. He plays so well on the West Coast swing. He loves this type of atmosphere. I think you can play Maverick McNeely again, top 10, over 3-1. That's where my money's going to be this week.
UFC, anything? Is there anything this week? Or?
We're off this week, so we'll be back in a couple weeks here for the UFC. But a nice ticket. Point of order here very quickly in the betting market. Last week, Miguel Bautista, his number just dropped like a rock against Vinicius Oliveira. And Bautista was over a $2 betting favorite. He closed $1.37. I hopped all over the Bautista side. I do not, unlike other markets, I do not shy away if I have a conviction that Mario Bautista was the right side. And Bautista clearly was the right side. And I bought in on that conviction, and it was one of the best wins that I've had in quite some time. Got inside the distance at plus $1.65. I'm not afraid to fade the marketplace and the money moves in UFC betting, much more so than other sports.
Who's the biggest UFC star right now?
What a great question. You know, you can make the argument that even in defeat, Paddy Pimblett, you know, because it's like even in defeat in not winning the title against Justin Gaethje, that guy moves the needle. Even in defeat, it was a great performance to stand in there for five rounds. I think he did more for his stock as a fighter, and somebody will pay to – well, we're in the Paramount era. You just have to pay for Paramount now. But in the old UFC pay-per-view days, that's a guy that still sells tickets and puts butts in the arena.
Dave, you're the best man. Where can we find you?
At DRoss Sports. Don't take yourself too seriously like Will and I don't out there on X, and we'll have a good time in that cesspool that is X out there on a day in, day out.
All right, that'll do it. Thank you to Dave Ross. Rate, review, subscribe. Keep those reviews coming. Appreciate it, guys. We'll be back on Friday. See you then.